more formal welcome to the Yoga Radical interview. This is Amy Wheeler, and we are April the 18th. And this is a moment that we get to have, Amy, before we let the energy and the emergence from this time that you so beautifully referred to, that the last time we spoke, there was no COVID. So I just want to name that we've said that already. There's been an acknowledgement. And then I'd like us to enter sacred space together. There, you and your forest and your space, and me here looking up at the sky, looking east to the Hudson River, which is just a few blocks away, and to let yourself ground in whatever way feels most comfortable for you. So that as we do speak together today, that it will be from your embodied recall, perhaps, of the wisdom that you carry, and to find voice from that grounded, embodied place. And also welcoming all of creation right here now as it's presenting itself to us. So that just like with this wonderful capacity to listen to what wants to move through, making more explicit that which has been implicit, is making visible that the presencing material really allows us to lift up, and that it serves the greater good, it serves the whole. And then adding any words of your own, any invocations or prayers that might be useful for us, Amy, either verbally or quiet.
What is flowing through me is just to keep that open channel so that the wisdom can flow through both of us in this conversation.
Beautiful. Thank you. So, as of listening, I'm curious about how you do see the new, this emergent energy, relative to the two things, your personal leadership style, this moving from me to we place, and then how you see your voice, your actions, your inspiration landing. So that's part of this journey. You'll remember it from last time, the presencing approach of being able to see what needs to be looked at, redirected, reconsidered, and then typically a major pause where the real conversation begins to become available, what we're really interested in begins to take form. And then it's the dance. This is what we do in the embodiment practices and social presencing, where we're just literally sensing in through the social field, not our personal approach, not what our training or lineage defaults might have been, but from this lived experience of what is happening now in the moment. And so I invite you to play with the me part and the we part almost as characters in your own play, and how they begin to become a little bit more visible to you, knowing that part of this conversation will likely land in part of the foreword, will probably land in part of your story. So we have time, a good amount of time here, 45 minutes, just to see what's been seeded and what begins to emerge. So that's my invocation in creating that container for our talk today. And thank you.
Thank you, Allie. So from the me part of it, I've been through enough traumatic events in my life that came on very suddenly, unexpectedly, to know that the moment this hit, and you know, it hit all of us in just a few hours, we realized everything is getting shut down. I instantaneously knew that although it would create hardship and there would be suffering and people definitely will pass from the earth from this, I also knew that the yoga community as it was not working. I've been watching it for 25 years not work. The models that were set up for yoga to be distributed in service to the world were not working for people. They were not able to sustain themselves. It had become very capitalistic. So when I first heard of this, the Amy part of it said, oh, this is a good thing. We're just going to have a quick death instead of a long drown out death of the yoga industrial complex. And I was ready day one to, all right, let's get this misery over with and let's start envisioning what's possible. We have a reset button here. It's actually an exciting time, I think, Amy thinks. Now, I had to temper that with the whole community, the we, that with every new beginning that I might be excited about, there's many people that are suffering that need to grieve, they need to feel, they need to sense, they need to be there. Their minds don't always move as quickly to the next thing. They're having some attachments to what was and wondering if they can hold on to it and maybe getting dragged around a little bit. So I had to temper my excitement of this new emerging thing that's happening and I couldn't be more thrilled about with the societal feeling and a lot of people that aren't ready to go there yet. And that the only way I personally could help be a leader is to back up and slow down and feel and be with them. And then, like I was telling you before, kind of start leading them by the heart to this new place that we're all going to go together and co-create together. But that I couldn't go at my pace. I needed to allow the emergence or the wave of all of us to come together on this journey. And that sometimes those of us who are a little, you know, thinking ahead and willing to go there, if we really want the whole community to make this transition together, we have to go at a pace that is comfortable for the group. And there's an old African saying that says something like, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go together, you know, it's going to be a little slower, but then you're going to have your tribe with you. So that's really what I've been trying to work with in my leadership is how can I tenderly and gradually help people come to this understanding that this is the best thing that's ever happened to us. And we have a clean slate. And now as leaders in the yoga community, I've been saying we need to get together and decide what we want together, what we want to co-create. And I would love to see that happen. I'd love to see the leaders in the yoga community come and say, how can we, with this clean slate, do our best to co-create something that's going to be of the best service to the world and the yoga community, instead of just thinking of that small self, what's going to happen to me and my organization, and am I going to make it? And, you know, could we actually set an intention together to move forward and really get it right this time? Because in my opinion, the last 20 years of what I call that yoga industrial complex, I'm not sure that we thoughtfully came together as a community. I feel like there was a lot of separateness. This organization had an agenda and this organization has an agenda and they're actually fighting with one another, right? So I just really want to help our community kind of redirect and reorient themselves to what's possible and set our sights high. let's go up into the heavens and pull down inspiration and really co-create together what we have the potential to co-create with this wonderful opportunity. So what do you think of that, Allie? Is that too idealistic?
let me just share with you from the four levels of listening. So my work is about listening in. And so during these interviews and my work for years and years as an inside innovator in many different types of organizations and leadership coach, is to understand the place from which people are sensing in to current reality and then future reality. And what I hear you naming relative to a leadership influencing capacity or competency, Amy, I call it in kind of ordinary language is your influencing skills, right? So we could talk about that relative to the past. But when the visionary in you isn't met yet with other kindreds who are more in the place of discomfort or distress or meanness, the question that arises from the presencing perspective is that the spark or the activation, we have two here, one that's externally driven, right? The crisis and the change on the planet. However, the internal direction of our intention is what actually creates the motivational structure that has legs, that has long-term capacity. So the work of a leader at this point, and you spoke to it, is about co-initiatory moves. So if we think of this as a game board, if we gamify this, right, and we think about, well, what are the pieces, what are the parts, who are the players, the work is to find out where is their pain, why are they suffering, right, and to acknowledge that, not from an overly empathetic and particularly not a sympathetic place, but if we look at what will generate an opening toward this shared opportunity, those are different conversations.
Yeah.
So that's what I want to stay really close to, because to me, that's where we can stay in our practice selves together. And that the sacred actions that derive from consistent long-term practice are the ways in which the ethics of being a yogi or someone who wishes for more yoga integrity to happen in the world, which is kind of the reframe that I would see you beginning to embody. The question is always, well, what kind of conversation will bring people to the table? What are the questions that we want to ask together when we see this big opening, when we see this opportunity? So I'm wondering if you've begun to learn from these being-centered places that is part of your practice, and has it lifted up yet into questions? And might we play with just naming some questions? In the beginning is the inquiry of yoga, so that we could stay very simple, elemental here.
Yeah, I want to go back to what you first said, that, you know, how are we going to create that spark and that activation in people who maybe aren't willing or ready to go to the new place? And it sounds kind of strange that in order, from my perspective, in order to get to the we and the co-creation, we actually have to look at those places of suffering for the individual. And through resolution of those, they are willing to go on the journey to we. It's like helping them feel safe enough, stable enough to move in the new direction. And then what I find when I have those conversations with individuals is they are very limited in their vision of what is possible. I'm oftentimes saying, wait a minute, you're looking at 10% of what's possible. You're limiting yourself. Can we open this up? Can we be more receptive? Can we take a quantum leap, and that's really difficult for people. Now, if they're willing to go there, you know, what are those questions is what I hear you asking. Is that right?
Yeah. So, but let's stay with the field of inquiry that you're kind of sensing into, just to stay with a sensing and a co-sensing on this. And this is an important leadership and very well-researched leadership. And you know the phrase, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make them drink. So I just want to tell a little story about my involvement in the early days at the Kripalu Institute for Extraordinary Living. I was the early consultant when they were formulating their programs, even before Satbir got there. And what began to be clear, and this is true from the meditation research as well, Amy, that the calming that happens in early meditation and in early yoga is very similar to what we know from the trauma research, where the first stage is simply learning how to survive, the coping. And when that's the primary face or self that the person is inhabiting, then the next two stages are pretty hard to activate, even much less inspire interest in. And those other two phases are the thriving phase and then the flourishing phase. If you don't know Barbara Fredrickson's research, she's the one who articulates this pretty well. She's been around in the complementary medical field for a long, long time. Early SAMHSA used her for some of the evidence-based practices for psych rehab work that I was involved with. So if it's true that there are many stages of development that happen in any tribe, any organization, any layered change-making process, that the change maker must adapt and adopt different strategies for different developmental stages. And so that's where the wisdom and compassion practices come in. And having worked in psychiatric rehabilitation, and now I do quite a bit with what are called well-recovered psych patients who are now looked at as the leaders for the lived experience that they have. So just like you said, to really make it work, to be seated, to be rooted, it's a slow community mobilization practice. And that's not a hierarchical practice, unfortunately. And the guru model, the lineages model, operate from top-down learning versus the inside-out learning, which is what we know happens with well-attuned practitioners and polyvagal theory. But those are still not well incorporated into our messaging. And so as a long-term change maker, and what happens now in leadership work, it's the way in which you create action through the language that either brings people on board or repels them. And so if there's an energy of conflict or a me positioning, that's not going to relay the difficulty of committing to a we consciousness. And that's the work of ego. You know, this is how the heart and mind begin to work together. And so these more bhakti practices, I don't even want to name it within a school of yoga, but there has to be such recognition that we are all in this together at such a fundamental level, no longer of survivorship, but that of course this is what we have to look at. It's like Tibetan architecture, you know, the long, long hallways down those beautiful temples where you have to bypass all of the scary deities to make sure that you're really ready. So I guess the questions that I would invite us to try and formulate, or at least to begin to formulate, they have to do with readiness. And so then what would be the criteria that we might establish from this COVID experience that would provide kind of like a readiness lens? And from a theory U perspective, it's the letting go part. Mm-hmm. And so why don't we kind of play with that a little bit? What needs to be let go of so that we might be ready as a community to begin to have these more co-creative, co-initiatory conversations? Because the lawfulness of must let go before new can come. And that's part of the loss and grief that you began to touch on.
I think the essence of the Yoga Sutra is Vairagyam, this surrender or letting go with the faith that the new will arrive, right? That when winter comes, there is going to be a spring. So although we have to let go before we can co-create, I think there needs to be some comforting that you will not fall into the abyss. You will, you know, this letting go doesn't mean that you won't survive this. We need to give the bhavana or the visualization, the hope for what is possible and probable if you decide to let go. Right. So I think encouraging people I've had a hard time letting go of things that I'm attached to, even when they don't serve me. Right. Yeah. But when someone says, look, this wasn't working for you anyway, and we've got this great new thing, would you like to come over here? I'm usually like, well, I have no choice over here anyway, so I might as well. Right. But if someone just stays with the, you know, you have to detach, you have to let go, it's the spiritual principle. Into what? That doesn't, you know, like we all know that that's a spiritual principle and we need to do it. But unless there's some hope and some love and some connection and we're going to do this together and let's move together, that's when people are drawn to helping to create change and transformation. So I just think they need the hard message that yes, it's time to let go. But on the other side of that is really a beautiful thing that we can do together.
That's right. So that's a leadership journey. Yeah. And that it's very similar to Joseph Campbell's heroes or heroines journey, mm-hmm. that a lot of this is also framed by. And the things that are helpful when that's acknowledged as the assessment of the situation, right? This is the current reality. And we have a future reality that we could co-create together, then it becomes the practices of sensing, of visualizing, of co-creating, and then of prototyping. That's the prototyping model from the Presencing Institute, which is to listen to the universe together. And that's the creative spirit that allows people to make something from nothing, even while they're still grieving. Yeah. And this is where the paradox of the joy and grief, right? A lot of people are talking about their sad joy during this time of COVID because of the self-discovery of the resources that they had underutilized, right?
Yeah.
And the fact that they hadn't really spent the time to inquire of others what their special secret treasures might also be. And that's about curiosity, as well as compassion. And these are the practices within the presencing work that as we open our minds and stay curious, and as we open our hearts, it's not like we can grab a heart. We have to allow them to reveal their hearts. And that's where the permission giving comes from, the conditions that are created, not the requests that are made. And that's the whole thing about generativity, is that it has to be the person's choice to come into the future with those of us who are, you know, visioning for years now. And to make it easy for them to feel success, because it's not, you know, a one size fits all future. It's a multitude of complexity. And so that's about the then very articulated, very concrete spaces and places where people can play to create their own identity. Because that's one of the things that happens. People have lost their identities and we're reorienting. And so leadership is critical here, but not massively hard-line leadership. And so that softness that you have, Amy, is so useful in these times.
And the invitation that I'm here, I'm with you, I'll walk the journey with you, but not, like you said, not a demand that they come along. It must be a choice.
Right, right. So what are the forums that you're finding, if at all yet, that begin to elicit and make visible these more heart and mind-centered approaches to change?
Could you define forums? Are you meaning like the platforms?
No, conversational settings or meetings. Have you started conversations about the future with others? Or what would you point to that demonstrate that a new future is already emerging, little examples of it or not?
Well, for me, I am so busy. My personal schedule has filled up so completely with people wanting to collaborate, people wanting to look to the new, you know, big time companies that had never considered bringing yoga therapy to their business because they had no need, they were fine, are now opening up and saying, hey, could we have a meeting? You talked to me, you know, you sent me an email 2 years ago, but now things have changed and we really think this could be something we want to take a look at, right? So I'm getting so much interest to the point where I'm almost feeling like there's a deluge that people are willing to look at new things that they previously were unwilling to look at. And so to me, that tells me that this opportunity to move together into the future is exploding. And this is just the beginning of it. I mean, if COVID continues and universities stay closed and, you know, however the nation responds to it, imagine 6 months or 12 months or 18 months from now, who will be willing to come to the table and have these conversations, right? We're just seeing the tip of the iceberg right now. So I think this is an amazing opportunity for yoga and yoga therapy to open ourselves up to new conversations, even conversations where we were told no before, they're going to reopen again and just set ourselves up for that and be willing. I think the willingness to look at it with the people who have power, who have money, who have control, had, maybe, I'm not sure how much they still have, but are we willing to step into that? Or are we going to cling on to our old ways of being and not pay attention and not allow the new to come in?
Okay. So if I were someone who didn't know anything about yoga and the impact of a personal practice over the years, and I wanted to support the health of community, either from a business perspective or from a medical perspective, how would you describe what you offer? Number one, to that customer, and what's unique about the offer relative to the sacred path of the wisdom traditions?
So, you know, I've done market research on this, and the things that yoga can do beautiful work with from a personal daily practice are anxiety, depression, trauma, pain, insomnia. Like those are stress, you know, those big five or six. And those are things that Western medical is not able to solve very well, which is interesting that the things we're really, really good at are the things that allopathic medicine has really been having trouble, you know, managing beyond giving pills that, you know, may kind of pacify the symptoms. So I think that's a really unique thing that, wow, we're really good at the things that nobody's finding a solution for. But the thing that makes it so unique is that the reason we're so good at solving those things is because we're bringing people back home to themselves and going inward, whereas most solutions out there are an external focus that you have to do this, take this, be this way, you know, like all these external things. And the thing that makes it work for pain and anxiety and depression and stress and insomnia is that we take you inward to actually become more self-aware, to feel your suffering, to go through your suffering, and to bring that hope and that change and that, you know, potential forward. And I just think that's so unique. I don't see very many things out there that are saying, by going in, you will go through and come out the other side.
Okay. So this is the window, the portal of the sacred text.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an operationalization of the sacred precept. And so talk to me from your knowledge of scripture then about how a practitioner such as you, with this wide lens and trajectory of the offer for the help of the community that you wish to serve, tell me how you stay grounded in your sacred duty.
How I stay grounded in my sacred duty as a yoga therapist, or how I help the client stay grounded in their sacred duty?
So this is an embodiment practice, this leadership journey. So it starts first with the me, and then from that me place, it translates into the we. So I just want to map that out from your perspective.
Mm-hmm. For me, I wake up at 4 a.m. every day, and I talk to the universe, not out loud. I get into that receptive state and allow whatever conversations, however subtle, need to flow. And I literally follow directions. So if I am guided in those early morning hours to do something, say something, connect with someone, no matter how outrageous or crazy it might seem, my first acts of the day are to do exactly what I was told. Like if I start my day at 9 a.m., like with my regular work, I'm getting up at 8 and writing that email that I'm like, why am I writing this? Okay, I'll do it. Fine. Right. I really take those subtle vibrations or feelings or sensations or thoughts or messages quite seriously and follow through with them. And that has not guided me wrong. And, you know, all of the Yoga Sutra is saying this, chapter 1, verse 3, is the whole purpose of yoga is to get in touch with that still, quiet place inside you where you can actually hear those subtle messages. That's what we're doing. We're calming the fluctuations of the mind, the ego, the fear, the, you know, all that stuff so that you can hear something deeper emerging. And then I think where many people get stuck, and I used to, but I think I'm getting through it, but where my clients get stuck is following through. Even if I can help them do practices to get that quiet, some of the things that they need to move into are like, no, I can't do that, right? And so a big part of what we do as yoga therapists is help people understand, yes, you actually can do that. And I'm here to guide you and hold your hand and be with you as you move into that space of your deepest heart and what it's telling you to do.
So from a theory you perspective, we call that the bottom of the you and the connecting to source. And so if it's true, as you're saying, that each of us has a unique guidance system, alignment, attunement, whatever language you want to put on it, if what we're trying to craft, Amy, through an understanding using the framework of the you, that this clarity of insight, this co-sensing action, right? You and the universe, your creative capacity. We move toward what we're starting to talk as confident action, right? I listen and then I follow through. And so that nexus with many people who may not have the trust, may not have the practice to do that follow through, it seems that we've landed on a kind of sticky wicket place relative to implementing a vision of a more unified sense of togetherness in the yoga therapy world. In the work of presencing and in the embodiment work that we do to try and unhinge this or disentangle all of this history, which has a lot of momentum to it, the habits, blah, 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 is we just name it as being stuck. And we go over this again and again, right? As yoga therapists or as change makers, you're a teacher, you've seen this. So what's the threshold that people haven't yet agreed to move through? So that's another sacred principle, which is the opening of the portal and then standing in front of the threshold. Sometimes it takes generations. Right? You go to all of the ancient literature, generations of waiting and stalling, and is it time yet? And so I just want to honor together now the creative process of continuous listening and continuously returning to source, your 4 a.m., your preparation, because from a change-making perspective, that's the readiness development. That's why, you know, the research on planning has everything to do with planning, but not necessarily following the plan. It's the preparation. So just want to track our time. If what I hear the engagement scenario being around the future, I see a great opportunity now to name a few of the conditions that exist, current reality, and then name some proposed future reality conditions, and to create like a little gap analysis, almost like a little map, so that we're not in a reactive place here in the COVID crisis, but that we really do engage it as an opportunity. So creating a future where everyone can thrive or flourish.
Yeah.
And what would be necessary to be present for that to happen?
Honestly, what comes to mind is that we don't know yet. We have not co-created it yet. I can't say what it will look like. All I can say is I'm standing on the edge with you, holding your hand, holding your heart, and I'm willing, and I'll be the first to jump in because it's exciting for me, and I feel it. There's an energetic impulse that has risen up in me in the last month that is undeniable.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel afraid. Let's see what emerges. I don't even honestly have an agenda or an intention or an idea what it will look like. It's truly a wide open space. But I am so willing to go in that direction with anyone else who's willing to go there with me.
Okay. Okay. So these, I don't know if I ever told you I was a wilderness trainer. I did long wilderness retreats mm-hmm. with corporate executives, and that's exactly the metaphor of the 40 days. I mean, all of these sacred transitional moments have to do with not having a clue what the end is going to be. But then those become criteria of an inner position that you're ready to go. And so that's that shoulder to shoulder rather than face-to-face, we cross the waters or we cross the field together. And those, I mean, it gets to be so simple and yet so hard, because it means that we can't really be thinking about this.
Right.
It's really
intellectual pursuit.
Yeah. And so who's ready for that? Who's ready to put down, you know, the cognitive frame and allow this to emerge?
And it is a we thing. We need each other to do it. But ultimately, if I haven't personally prepared myself in my own heart to trust that I'll know what to do at these moments, I don't know what's out there and what's going to happen, but I know myself well enough. I'm connected deeply to myself, and I'll know what to do in the moment. That's really all I need to know, that whatever that adventure is going to be, I trust myself to know what to do when I get there. And then if everyone else is doing that too, that's where we co-create this together.
Right, right, right. When I was a first responder to the 9/11 disaster, we had a similar conundrum, because nobody knew how ill-prepared people were around their own personal re-traumatization around this event down in New York City, which is my hometown. And it feels a little similar here. The stripping away of what was familiar, and then this lack of social contact, brings up a very specific, it's almost like the big waves have left things on the shore, and that would be an interesting inquiry for people to begin to identify what's truly important about your practice. That's why I asked you the question, so that when you do talk to these folks who will see the benefit of self-regulation in their workplace through a yoga therapy intervention or whatever, so that people could be more productive, they could be more present, less absenteeism, a better morale, that kind of feel good. And it's like, I'm laughing because of the oxytocin, you know, it's just like, we don't know how it gets created sometimes. And we have to trust that we know how to create it.
Yeah.
And so that actually starts to feel more like my friends in the improv world, the, you know, improvisation world, the innovation. And in theater, you know, where it has to be diverse. So if we were to start to think together about the shape of things to come, Amy, I'm thinking about the forward now, it would be that feeling state that you referred to, and also the elements of trust of others who were kindred, and that there was some buy-in, that there is a we that had sufficient capacity to move forward together.
Yeah.
And that's how prototypes work. A small team. Yeah.
And that's a really hard message for people to hear sometimes. Like, what? You want me to go on this journey? You're not going to tell the agenda. You're not going to, you know, tell me where we're going to end up. And yet that's how all the miracles get created. I don't think Einstein or Tesla or any of these guys had any idea of where they were going to end up.
Oh.
And they were fine with that.
No, it wasn't about thinking. But this blending with the divine aspects of the universal life force, I mean, that's basically what I just put into my poetry book, was the absolute recognition after having serious physical injuries that there was a body that would walk again. And so there is a yoga therapy field that will have, what would be the word to describe it? What will people know once they see it in the future?
I think potentially we could have a society full of embodied people again.
Okay.
And meaning yoga will have impacted so many people to become inhabited in their heart and their sensations and their nervous system again. And I don't know anything beyond that, what that looks like, but that would change the trajectory of the world. Because right now, there's a whole lot of people out there disembodied, numbing, not feeling, not tuning into themselves, right?
Yes. So let's just tune in together here these last minutes, Amy, so that the guidance, the wisdom of an embodied future on the planet, right? This nervous system that you refer to helps to open this path of potential. And this witnessing of the awakening potential doesn't have to create big action right away. Right? It's more of this leaning back into the material that we've already been given. And this is this generative field, this listening from this deeper place of connection. And so how might a Theory U type of practice, process, really help so that it's not an individual who's saying this should be so, but it's rather that we're educating ourselves together from these different field structures, you know, the attentional fields. So just qualitatively checking in with your nervous system, with your physical body, with the space around. Just notice where you are in your body and tell me what you're sensing.
Well, I feel a quickening and excitement. I wouldn't say nervousness, but it's like a baby that's about to be birthed. Like there's some anxiety around it. There's some scariness around it, but yet you're like, I want to meet this damn baby, you know? So it's not a comfortable state in my nervous system. It's knowing something big is emerging and I'm willing to embrace that. But that doesn't mean like I'm sitting on the beach on a sunny day with a cocktail. It's not comfortable and calm and completely, you know, relaxed.
Right.
But I'm okay with that.
So freedom, you know, the price of freedom, Peter Block, a wonderful teacher, old friend, he says the price of freedom sometimes is that anxiety, that excitement. And that's the uplifting quality of the parasympathetic kind of saying, hey, there's more.
Yeah.
So I'm so grateful for you spending another moment with me in this project. It's a thrill to hear from these edge conditions of leaders. It's really fun for me, and I hope it's been enjoyable for you.
Very enjoyable. I loved it.
Yeah. And so let's keep aware of each other around the use of the Theory U practice and process. And please don't hesitate to call on me, Amy, anytime if you wanted.
I have another meeting right now, but we could do like a Facebook Live together about it or something too. That'd be really fun.
I'm happy to bring in, a long-term committed practitioner and member of the field. So think about it and then we'll play. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Be well. Take care.
Bye. Enjoy.